Welcome to Bonding Time, the BDA's podcast series on the U.S. bond markets, and typically through a D.C. lens. This podcast series will cover a range of issues, including the latest bond market technologies, politics and federal regulation, the challenges of COVID, and the new remote workforce, diversity and inclusion on the trading desk, and interviews with bond market leadership from across the country. As the only D.C.-based trade group exclusively focused on the U.S. bond markets, the BDA is really excited to bring you this new product, which we hope adds some tangible value to you and your business.
In a Bonding Time, hosted by the Bond Dealers of America, I'm Brett Bolton, and today we're hosting an old friend and colleague, Brian Egan, the Policy Director at the National Association of State Treasurers, for a D.C. update. Brian, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Brett. Doing well. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for the invitation.
Sure. It's good to catch up. I'm glad we're able to do this. So let's dig right in. I know it's been an active nearly, 3 weeks now since the Biden administration was inaugurated. Impeachment's slowing down some legislative process, and clearly a lot of the oxygen has been taken out of the room because of impeachment. But as of this week, it appears that a stimulus bill is back on track for passage in the coming days. What's your view on this package? I know I saw a bottom line figure coming out of the House of $350 billion to state and local governments are generally in that ballpark. How do you guys feel about that, and where do you think we go from here?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I'll start off with just saying kind of where we've been, where things have gone. You know, first and foremost, at the risk of sounding cliche, you know, obviously the past year has been unprecedented and challenging for everybody. And certainly state finance officials and state treasurers are included in that list as well. You know, I think they've done a tremendous job at keeping the lights on, so to speak, and the finances running smoothly. Congress has taken a number of unprecedented steps for we've had five COVID stimulus packages. Federal Reserve, of course, I know, you know, as you all as BDA has been working on and working with very closely as well, has also taken unprecedented steps to support state finances. And we've been grateful for everything that's been done so far. Obviously, the CARES Act included $160 billion in the coronavirus relief fund. And that was a huge shot in the arm and was extraordinarily helpful for states in addressing those COVID expenditures. Where it kind of came up short, though, is that it really didn't get to the heart of the matter and where the real kind of pain points and struggles have been for states. And that's just, you know, we've seen across the board revenue decreases in all sectors and, you know, sales taxes, other sorts of kind of fees and revenues. Some other kind of sources of revenue that tend to be a little bit more volatile and less lagging indicators, as we like to say. And what we're now seeing is we're seeing Congress and we're seeing the administration, and we're seeing a lot of optimism, as you mentioned, around this new kind of fund that would provide $350 billion to state and local aid. I'll just, you know, kind of start off by saying, you know, what we do know so far, and that's what we've seen the House put out. And that's largely been tracking what we saw the Biden administration put out, as you mentioned, about 3-4 weeks ago, although in 2021, you know, 3 or 4 weeks can sometimes feel like an eternity.
2020 part two, as I've been saying on these
podcasts. Yeah, I think we were all expecting New Year's Eve to magically transform somehow, but in some ways it's just
January 1 and it's
yeah. Seems to come up short in that respect. But we're, you know, there's a growing sense of optimism. I will say, I don't think any of my members, you know, we've seen optimism before, and they like to joke they're not budgeting or planning to spend a dollar until it's in their account. But certainly, I think this is a high point for the optimism. We've seen the House, it puts out this $350 billion in state and local aid, roughly puts about 60% of that into states and about 40% into locals. And certainly that's a welcomed addition, and it's a welcomed movement on the state's part. I think states are also happy to see that local governments are finally getting some, you know, of the much needed fiscal support that they need as well. If you remember, particularly those smaller ones were largely left out of previous COVID response packages. And certainly from the state's perspective, if the local governments aren't doing well, the state's not going to be happy either. You know, in some, this is great forward movement. I know you mentioned impeachment has been taking up some of the oxygen. I think we've actually been pleasantly surprised at how well the Senate's been able to walk and chew gum at the same time. Certainly, it has taken oxygen. It has slowed things down, but things are still nonetheless moving at a really quick pace. And I think you guys probably agree with this as well. It seems like that March 14th deadline for the unemployment insurance is being seen as a deadline, you know, possibly a soft deadline, but certainly a target that congressional leadership is shooting for. And at this point, it seems like they're relatively on track to meeting some sort of package by mid to late March.
Good. So let's use that as a pivot point. I know you just mentioned that stimulus is moving along at a rather high, a very quick pace. And to our viewers here, our listeners here, that's because of budget reconciliation, correct? The process where you can say we don't need bipartisan majority in the Senate, so we can pass at, you know, 51 to 50, bring in the vice president vote. So we're there. Stimulus is going to pass if it passes through that measure. So where the BDA looks at that and where we've really been debating in-house is how much will this slow progress for municipal bond provisions? I know last week, Senator Wicker introduced a couple amendments during the Votorama on the budget vote in the Senate that would reinstate advancer fundings and create a new direct pay bonds program, the American Infrastructure Bonds. We can dig into those in a little bit, but I'm just curious at how much do you think this slows down the infrastructure process, and or how much do you think this slows down implementation or drafting of language that would reinstate advancer fundings, American Infrastructure Bonds, PABs, the Christmas tree that was in HR 2 last year, the Highway Transit Act that we all have been paying so much attention to, right?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, I feel like there's been a joke in the media anytime somebody goes on CNN or Fox or MSNBC and starts explaining reconciliation, I feel like the reporter always cuts them off for going into a little too much arcane detail. So
it's brutal. The parliamentarian has a job that we don't fully understand, but it's brutal, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's the topic that I think we have all been forced to learn much more about in the past couple of weeks than we anticipated we would have. But nonetheless, you know, please cut me off if I'm going a little too off script here. But yeah, you're totally right. I mean, the Democrats in the Senate have a razor thin majority that relies on Vice President Harris's tie-breaking vote. And the filibuster is still, at least at this point, very much a thing. You know, we don't see moderate Democrats really chomping at the bits to pull the quote-unquote nuclear option and get rid of that rule. The kind of more normalish way around that 60-vote majority and that we've seen other Congresses and both sides of the aisle use is budget reconciliation, exactly what you're talking about. And this COVID stimulus bill is progressing through reconciliation. You know, it's largely being contained more specifically to COVID-related provisions. But what you're alluding to is this kind of mythical, you know, will Congress get a second bite at the apple in the 117th? And specifically, will they use a second reconciliation package and budget resolution to pass a large, bold, innovative infrastructure package? You know, I think there's a lot of optimism, and I think a lot of people are expecting that that discussion will continue and will certainly ramp up a lot immediately after this kind of COVID stimulus gets through. Now, with the bond provisions, you know, reconciliation, some of the rules are, you know, it can't be, you know, not related to the budget, right? So it's very limited to tax expenditures, budget outlays, revenue measures, fiscal or, you know, federal deficit levels, et cetera. Now, first hearing that kind of gives you, particularly from the tax exemption of munis perspective, that gives you a good bit of latitude to really change that. Prior to a reconciliation package, though, you do have to pass a budget resolution, which provides kind of those guidelines of what reconciliation is going to accomplish. And that has to have kind of budget implications that you can look out to for 10 years. And so while changes to the tax code are certainly germane to the reconciliation process, some of the changes in the bonding world absolutely would have budget implications that go beyond a 10-year budget resolution. So, you know, if you're passing, you know, even if you only brought back advance refundings or changed PABs or something like that, and you capped the new issues at a certain date or time or year or whatever, you know, presumably if somebody took a bond out 5 years into a budget resolution, that would have, you know, budget, you know, ramifications well beyond kind of that budget resolution. And that's where it gets complicated. And I know it's getting kind of wonky, but essentially that is something that Democrats have to, and, you know, it appear to be working through. It is, how do you bring back advance refunding bonds and try to make sure that it's budget neutral 10 years in the future? I think there are a lot of revenue measures that, particularly if you're talking about infrastructure, that could be on the plate. Modest changes to the corporate income tax rate, gas tax, et cetera. Those are kind of different levers they have. I think it remains to be seen how much they want to, you know, deficit spend in terms of the infrastructure and how much offsets they want. But certainly when you're getting into something with bonds, just simply because unlike a year-by-year authorized grant, changes to tax exemption on bonds are going to have implications that last beyond that 10-year window. So presumably they need to be some, offset in some capacity beyond that 10-year window. So that's where, from a very technical standpoint, it gets complicated. I certainly don't think that closes the door on any of it, though. I think there's a lot of momentum and a lot of interest. And I think some of these bonding provisions, you mentioned Senator Wicker on advanced refunding bonds earlier, some of these provisions have pretty robust bipartisan support. So they're far from controversial. They're just a little bit technically challenging to fit into reconciliation. But, you know, I think we're still optimistic that at least some of them will be accomplished if Congress is able to pull a reconciliation package through infrastructure. I think they're seen as central pieces to an infrastructure package.
Sure. And I was speaking with my colleague Michael Decker yesterday, and he mentioned the last time that it was Build America bonds back in 2010, they were hated by the Republicans. And now that a Republican is introducing very similar legislation, that's a great sign of how much good work that the municipal bond community has done in the advocacy arena over the past decade. So I think that speaks to exactly what you're saying. So one negative turn here before I want to get into priorities, if you will. You mentioned the raising debt and deficit. I saw that yesterday, the deficit was actually higher than this year's GDP. Is there any concern that the Biden administration goes back to 2012, gets in the way back machine and says we should cap the tax exemption to help pay off this debt and deficit? I know that that's a major concern of the BDA and our membership that would be even brought up again. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, now I want to go to the Wayback Machine and look at what whitehouse.gov looked like back then. But
I assume too. What were you, 13 back then? So I'm sure you were a worldwide.
No, I was a ripe 15 back then. No, I'm just kidding with you. You know, here's the thing. I mean, it's an idea, right? And like all ideas, they're kind of always perennial and they never really truly go away. To that extent, I think everybody's totally justified in having concerns and working to explain the ramifications, particularly, I mean, from the issuer perspective in raising the cost of infrastructure. It's a short-sighted trade-off. The revenue it would raise for the federal government would be more than offset by the increased in infrastructure costs on the state and local governments who, let's be honest, build and maintain the lion's share of this infrastructure. I'm sure I'm not the first guest speaker on this podcast to say that.
Devil's advocate here, though, while we're on the subject, couldn't you make the same argument for advance refunding?
I absolutely would make the argument, but I think I'd be preaching to the choir with this audience that advance refunding is a good investment.
That's why I guess my antenna always gets up here, and advance refundings were taken in the middle of the night just to offset, but you could make the argument that they make infrastructure show much cheaper as well at the state and local level. And here we are trying to get them back 4 years later, right? 3 or 4 years later. Wow, time flies. I think that makes sense. And I know that the BDA is not the only organization pushing to keep them in place. And I know that the BDA is not the only organization that gets the eye roll back when we can meet in person on the Hill about the Muni tax exemption, you know, being a foregone conclusion that it's not going to be touched, but we still bring it up, hammer it home regardless, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't think there's an imminent concern that we're going to see like a 28% cap or anything like that. But I think once an idea is out in the wild, it stays out in the wild sometimes and it never truly goes away. So, I mean, I think you guys are totally right to remain vigilant.
Right. So for NAST, what are you guys looking at for 2021? I know we went through some of the potential vehicles. We didn't really touch on the highway transit package, the HR2 of last year that included some of these bond provisions were tossed in. Do you think that's a vehicle that could pass some of these priorities? And to finish that thought, what are your priorities, your members' priorities for 2021 related to bonds?
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, we have a host of priorities outside of the bonding space, but I think most kind of, you know, overlapping with BDA, I mean, COVID stimulus is certainly taking up all the oxygen. I know we talked about the impeachment, but I mean, COVID is the thing that is also here to stay, and that will remain a priority for us. I mean, getting this package across the finish line, but then also once it does pass, all the enactment, working with all the agencies, determining where all the sources of funding for states are, the more kind of restrictive earmarked things, vaccine funding, schools, et cetera, and then also hopefully this more kind of flexible revenue replacement program as well. Beyond that, with bonds, you know, advance refunding, as we already talked about, I mean, that is our end-all be-all top legislative priority in the bonding space. It is certainly an incredibly useful tool for state governments in terms of kind of being able to keep our finances flexible and also to free up capital for additional infrastructure investment, exactly what you mentioned. It's just a common sense piece of legislation. And I think thanks to the great work of all of the issuer groups and groups like BDA, we've really made this a bipartisan issue. And I think, you know, we've all been pleased to see the champions on both sides of the aisle come out in support of this. Certainly, we'll be tracking some of the other bond provisions that we may see in an infrastructure package, the private activity bonds, the American infrastructure bonds, or those kind of BABs 2.0 that everybody's been kind of colloquially calling them, bank qualified debt. Those aren't issues that are really kind of at the top of our list. I mean, they certainly are issues that our state debt managers and our state treasurers have thoughts on and in many cases are largely supportive on changes of those issues. But we're mostly focused on advance refundings at this time. Things like bank qualified debt, I think that's another issue where you see growing and honestly pretty robust bipartisan support. Just another kind of area of just common sense, right? I mean, I think everybody wants to help smaller jurisdictions who face, you know, larger obstacles to kind of accessing credit markets, right? I mean, it's just, again, another kind of common sense area that I think Congress can come together if they truly want to help finance infrastructure, particularly in smaller, more rural communities. Private activity bonds, again, we don't really have explicit policy on that, but certainly things we're tracking are, you know, what sort of expansions will be made there, particularly to help finance more affordable housing, which of course is a growing concern for a number of state officials across the country. It's not really a coastal issue at this point. It's pretty much a national issue. And then American infrastructure bonds or BABs 2.0, you know, I mean, I think our big concern there is, and I probably don't need to tell your members about this, but some of the experiences that we've had with sequestration of those subsidies and, you know, certainly welcoming new tools in the toolkit, so to speak, but just making sure that there's a reasonable assurance or reasonable safeguards to either prevent sequestration or to make sure issuers can navigate challenges if sequestration becomes a threat to those bonds again in the future.
I won't force speak on NAS behalf here, but just the general issuer community's take on the AIB language. Is it sufficient? Is it strong enough? I know that the entire community feels burned by sequestration in the BABS program. So I'm just curious there. Is it enough? Is it strong enough?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an ongoing debate about whether or not something can ever be fully sequestration proof. A future Congress can always change the rules of the game to meet whatever rules they want to play the game by.
No, absolutely.
And that's, you know, I think the thing about the tax exemption is that, you know, Congress hath to taketh away, right? It's not that Congress giveth to us. And, you know, I think to that extent, seeing some of that sequestration language proofing, as I like to call it, language that we've seen floating around, makes the subsidy a little bit more of a thing that has to be taketh away, more so than provided. And to that extent, I think, you know, there's a little bit more optimism on that front, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's a new direct subsidy bond. It, you know, if issuers will work with their broker dealers, their advisors, to just make sure and, you know, think through, and I don't have the answers to this, but think through, you know, what are some of the safeguards that can be included in the bond transaction itself, that if those subsidies are sequestered again, that, you know, we don't have issuers seeing pretty, you know, real reductions to those subsidies and kind of leaving them out to dry, so to speak.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. I appreciate the clarification there. What I'm going to put you on the spot here for a final question. Hedge advance refundings for me. What's your take for 2021? What's the percentage chance of an act of advance refunding?
I think we'd all be paid a lot more if we could give a hardened percentage on anything in the 2020s these days. I mean, you need to be almost clairvoyant.
Yeah.
I don't want to weasel out of an answer. I will certainly say we're more, your audience can't see you shaking your head, but I can see you shaking your head. I think since 2017, we are the closest to advance refundings than we've ever been. I think they're decently bipartisan. So for one perspective, that, I mean, that's a huge plus. But they're also something that's clearly, I mean, just seeing that in the Moving Forward Act, last year's House infrastructure plan, you know, I mean, if Congress pulls together another infrastructure plan, I think advanced refundings are definitely toward the top of the list, right? I mean, it can't, you know, states and local governments, we need additional financing tools, but we also need additional funding. But certainly Congress, you know, wants it to be both as well, right? I mean, they want to provide additional funding, but they also want to help states help themselves. And I think advanced refunding is just one of the most common sense ways to do that. So I think it's at the top of the priority list. I think the outstanding questions are, can Congress pull through an infrastructure package and a second in a second bite at the apple with the reconciliation package? That's not something that has a lot of precedent, is two reconciliation packages in one Congress. And then I think the other thing is just the technicalities of how do you make sure bringing back advanced refunding bonds doesn't have budget implications beyond 2030? And, you know, I'm not an expert on that, but my understanding is that the only way to do that is to have some sort of a longstanding offset to take care of that exemption. So not everything they're going to put in that infrastructure package would need an offset. You know, I mean, if you're going to have a grants program to states for 8 years, that has budget, you know, implications for 8-9 years. That's not something that you really need to fully offset. But things like bonds will likely need an offset because there's really no way to kind of contain them into a 10-year window. But again, I think they're at the top of the priority list. So I think if there's a way, it will be done.
Well, I didn't get exact percentage out of you. I'll take that as a sufficient answer. So I appreciate that. So again, thanks, Brian. Thanks for joining us. It's always great to work with you and NAST on these important issues. And I know our members will enjoy listening to this podcast. So I hope we have you back soon.
Yeah, thanks, Brett. And happy to be here and grateful for the partnership we have with the bond dealers.